Tony, good.
Blog Talk Radio.
I hear you.
Good evening and welcome to ScaryCast, the most exciting hour on radio, I'll tell you that. We've got a great show tonight. This is our Murder 123 episode, and thanks to Tony Filosi for giving me a tip on this very interesting Murder 123 suspect. So I'm going to introduce our co-hosts, and I'll start with Tony Filosi. How are you doing tonight, Tony?
I'm doing absolutely wonderful, John. I'm glad to be here. I just got in from work just a few minutes ago and ran straight back into my office and called you guys.
Well, I'm so glad you did. We're glad you're here. We're celebrating your suggestion. We've got a weirdo tonight, and I'll talk about him after I introduce our other two great co-hosts. First of all, from Emerald Isle, North Carolina, the great actor and wrestler Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling. How you doing tonight, Papa Stro?
Great. I know you mentioned weirdos. I mean, you might as well be talking about, I mean, that's like the show. We're all weirdos.
Several of us.
You fit right in.
Well,
hey, I claim to be a weirdo.
Right?
I wear that label right. Proud.
Oh, I know.
It's like the weirdo family.
I tell you what. Yeah. We got some weirdos, and I will give everybody a preview after I introduce the Queen of ScaryCast, Robin McCray. How are you doing tonight, honey?
I am doing fantastic. How you doing?
I could not
good
be
to see
better.
Good hear everybody's We're voice here tonight.
Yeah, it really is. Devin is trying to get caught up at work, but other than that, the three of us are here. We always have a good time. We really do. So first of all, kudos and thanks to VSC Nation. We are on not only right now, if you're listening to us live, but we're on at 11 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday night, going right into midnight, which is, Papa Stro, what happens at midnight on Friday night?
Well, I don't turn to a pumpkin, but it's the Stro Zone, actually, on my Facebook page, facebook.com/StroTheMaestro. And this Friday night's feature will be The Wolfman, starring Bela Lugosi and Lon Chaney. So please tune in.
The original Universal Wolfman. That is a truly great film.
I thought that years ago.
It's good. It really is. Well, that sounds great, Papa Stro. So, yeah, we've got a lot of fun things going on here on VSC Nation, and just glad to be here. So we've spoken with Tony, we've spoken with Papa Stro, and we've said hello to the Queen of ScaryCast, which is Robin Craig. Next 2 weeks, Papa Stro, we got a buddy of yours coming on because we got on the phone, we started talking, and it never stopped. And if I say the wild thing, Papa Stro, you know who I'm talking about, right?
Refresh me, but I'm curious.
Stevie Ray. Stevie Ray. It turns out that Stevie Ray, the wild thing, loves the paranormal.
I'm friends with the other Stevie Ray from Harlem Heat, Dr. John.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
That's another Stevie Ray from like way back. Oh my God.
Oh my goodness. He's as crazy as I am. That's why we got along so well. So we got another call to finish up tomorrow morning, and then we're going to get
wonderful.
Him scheduled for a scary kid. What?
Wonderful.
Yeah, oh yeah. No, I like the guy. I really do. He's very entertaining, very nice, and we really did have. I loved it when at the very end of our conversation we started talking about Planet X. I knew I had met a soulmate from Kansas City when we talked about Planet X and the Sumerians and everything. I said, this can't get any better. So I said, another weirdo like me. So it's going to be great. We'll have Stevie Ray from, we'll have him on here in a couple of weeks, and that'll be great. But tonight, Tony Filosi,
Yes. We're
going to discuss a weirdo, and that's what his mother called him. I've got a different, completely different take on this guy. And I know it may make some people mad, but I don't care. I think it's important that we all have our own opinions about murderers when we talk on Murder 123. And that's, of course, a production of ScaryCast. And we're going to be doing that here. And we've got some more interesting Murder 123s coming up because we keep finding a whole bunch of new folks. I've got, now, Papa Stro, you're going to help me on this name. I heard, I was talking to Stevie Ray. Who was the gentleman that was the head of UFW that died about 25 years ago?
Oh, you talking about Herb Abrams?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That
is
going to be a heck of a scare.
Matter of fact, Dark Side
of
the Ring just did an episode about him not too long ago.
Yeah, and I'm going to ask all of our folks to look at that, and I may have some interesting sheds of light on that, and I might ask our remote viewer, Robin McCray, to do a little bit of peering in on that one. And we'll see what happens. I think it'll be interesting. Now that's going to be probably in 2 months. That'll take a little while to produce. So anyway, it's going to be a lot of fun. Okay, now here we are, the curious story of Edmund Kemper. So Tony Filosi, give us the 2-minute warning about Edward Kemper. What did you say about him when you sent me that email?
Edward Kemper is absolutely insane, which, I mean, you have to be insane to be a serial killer. Well, you can be extremely intelligent, but to do the things that he did, it's just unbelievable. He started out having he stopped his school teacher whenever he was in second grade and had some sort of knife with him. And so that should kind of thrown a bunch of red flags to a lot of different folks. You know, they should have tried to gotten him some help then. He also would play these odd games with his sisters, and I think you mentioned it in the dossier, called a gas chamber or electric chair, where they would basically execute, he would act like he would murder his sisters, and then he would play with their dolls, and then he would cut their heads off. So their hands,
mm-hmm.
Correct. And I don't get any of it, you know, from a perspective of why you would do it, but he had a thing about the hands, and it will get into later when he murdered his mother. He cut her head and her hands off also, but there's a lot of interesting, he's a very interesting character, but didn't
his mom abuse him?
She didn't physically abuse him, she mentally abused him. She had a lot of issues herself, and she made him sleep in a basement because they were afraid of him, and with good reason, because, you know, he ended up, we don't want to give too much away before we get him, but he ended up killing his grandparents. He killed his, what I find, you know, he killed all females as far as we know. That's all, and that's all he'll talk about. But the first female that he killed was his paternal grandmother, and then killed his grandfather when he came home so he wouldn't have to go through the pain of, in his words, of knowing that his wife was gone. And the next to last person that he killed was his mother, and he described them both as very domineering, very strong-willed women. And then after he killed his mother, cut her head off and her hands, he, in his words, humiliated his mother's corpse. So we'll break that down.
I just wondered if maybe he had cut the head off because she was so emotionally, you know, would say things and was verbally abusive. And if she was also physically abusive, that could be why the hands were a big thing for him. Like with all these different people that he killed, he took off the head, he took off the hands. I think for some reason, I really feel like there's a tie into that.
Very possible. And when he cut his mother's head off, he stood it up, screamed at it for an hour, and then threw darts at her. He played darts with her head. Then he had sex with her decapitated head and her remains. He usually raped his victims after they were dead. From what I can gather, all of them after they were dead and decapitated. And he would carry the head. And here's something that's interesting. You know, we've talked about Dahmer and Samore and Bundy before, and they would keep the heads as trophies and then sleep with the heads and have sex with the heads and things like that. And he did the same thing, and he got off on basically he would kill a co-ed and bring the bodies home, decapitate them in the driveway, basically, where if somebody just walked by, they would have seen what he was doing, put the body in the trunk, put the head in some sort of like bowling ball bag or some sort of bag, and carry the head up to his room or his apartment where he would proceed with his fantasy. And he liked to hang out with policemen. He hung out with, and I went over 2 minutes. I'm sorry, John. I'm going to toss this back to you before I just keep talking.
Disclaimer, for those that have had dinner, please listen to this podcast cautiously.
Yeah, exactly. If you just had it, because this is going to get brutal. This is brutal. He was a brutal dude. He's like, what, 6'7", 6'9"?
He was 6'9" tall. I mean, he was taller than Bozo the Clown.
Wow. Good thing he didn't be anything on him.
So that's the, there's lots more, but that's the nutshell version.
Yeah, the nutshell version is it's pretty cool. We've got some more details that are disturbing. Yes, he played gas chamber and electric chair with his younger sister. She wanted her to tie him up and flip on an imaginary switch, and he would tumble over and writhe around on the floor pretending he was being executed by gas inhalation or electric shock. Now, that is a lot like one of our other characters on this show, on the Murder 123 show. You just know something's wrong with the kid. And I think any little sister should probably have the smarts to say, "Mom, he wants me to play electric chair with him, and I flip a switch, and then he acts like he's being electrocuted." Now, somehow, that doesn't take a whole lot. That just doesn't take a whole lot for me to say, "You better tell Mom this is not good. Something's going wrong." Although Mom would probably spank him. Although Mom would probably be scared because he was so big. And Mom was really horrible. And this goes to show, I think my three colleagues on here and I would guarantee 100% we all had some pretty good parents because we all seem to be fairly balanced. I'm going to go right through. Tony, did you have some pretty good parents that were nice to you?
Decent. They were decent.
Robin, how about you?
My parents were incredible. I was very, very blessed.
Papa Stro, how about you?
The best. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, and I knew your parents. Your dad was so awesome. And then my parents were absolutely great. And, I mean, I think we all know what good parents are. But if you're a kid, if you're 7 years old and you got someone browbeating you all the time and scaring you because, you know, at 7, 8, 9 years old, a parent can scare you. I'm going to go back around. Papa Stro, am I correct? A parent can scare a 10-year-old or under?
Oh, absolutely. Both my mom and dad, when they get firm with me, they definitely had my attention.
Yeah. Robin, your parents could, when necessary, they could straighten you out, couldn't they?
And my kids always told me, they said, you know what? We knew we were in trouble when Mom's voice got quiet. The lower talked, the more we knew.
And the less you talked, it was bad. Tony, you understand that one, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, you know, you look at what he went through. I mean, when you're living with your mom, she's split from dad. That's the only person that you have in the world. You know, you go to school, you come back. You have nobody else but your mom. And she wants to start giving you a hard time. That can be devastating. I mean, that truly can be devastating. I mean, we knew kids whose parents would just yell at them all the time. You could tell they looked frightened all the time, even when they came to school. So, I mean, it's just, you know, it is so unfair. This poor kid just got hell handed to him every night. And then let's face it, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I was scared of the basement in the dark. I certainly was, and if I'd had to spend the night down there with the door locked, I'd have been petrified. You know, poor kid had to spend the night down there in like a jail cell. And basements aren't fun. They really aren't when you're a kid. When you're an 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old kid, you know, you just don't know. So I really feel I do have a lot of empathy for this kid. He really went through hell. And I can assure you that from what I've learned in graduate school in psychology and counseling, hell can be given physically and mentally to a kid. So you can't, you know, it gets to where you can't tell the difference. Sometimes the mental is worse. The physical is a little easier because it's going to be over and then you're done. It may hurt for a while, but that's it. But the mental, that is just, you just don't know when that's going to happen. So I have a lot of empathy. I feel bad for this kid. Now, he knew better. I think we all know better than to go kill people. But, you know, it's a shame when things like this happen. It's like everyone's fault. So, let's see. He had his first, now this is interesting. The bio calls it a near-death experience as a child. Actually, he was almost murdered. His older sister tried to push him in front of a train, and then she successfully pushed him into the deep end of a swimming pool where he almost drowned. Now, in my opinion, that's attempted murder. Sorry. I don't care if it's done by a sister or a brother. So the kid, they attempted to murder him twice. They mentally tortured him. I mean, Robin is the queen of scary cast. And I know you're a mom. What can that do to a poor kid?
Oh, it's just unbelievable. Now, I have to say, I've been reading the dossier you sent. And this one, to me, is entirely unlike some of the others. You know, and John, you know me, on different shows we've talked. I don't think that there's a lot of people, every time anything's bad, they say they're demonic. Everything is demonic. And I'm always the first one out there going, no, demonic comes from the underworld. You know, evil can just be evil. In this case, like, I've read this now 3 times just to kind of get thoughts on it. I feel like this kid was taken over by some demonic. I mean, he ended up demonic. And I just get the weirdest feeling, almost like, and I've not had this with some of the other ones we've done. I feel like when he was born, he was a vessel, and that's what got him, was something demonic. Because even at a young age, that's why they were so afraid. They knew. They knew something was wrong, but I don't think he was the only one. I think his sister was in that same frame of mind. I think he was worse, but his mom, from what I'm getting, and I could be wrong on all of it, but my thing is the mom treated him like a freak show because, like she said, she was afraid of him. She locked him in certain places and kept him away from here and away from there. And because she was so verbally abusive to him, there's no reason not to believe that she was not also telling the sister, you know, he's evil. He needs to be destroyed. He's evil. He's evil. He's evil. And that's probably has a lot to do with why she tried to kill him. I mean, she did. She tried to kill him. As a child, she tried to kill her brother.
I agree. I think so.
When he was born, something, a demonic presence took hold of him. And I, like I said before, I don't normally say that. I'm usually the one when everybody's saying, oh, look at it, it's demonic, going, no, it's not demonic. There's a difference between evil and demonic. You know, in this particular case, I truly believe that when he was born, something entered him and made him demonic.
It definitely wasn't Jake from State Farm, that's for sure.
What?
It definitely wasn't Jake from State Farm, that's for sure.
No.
No.
Exactly.
Right,
but I think his mom, because she was so nuts anyway, she's probably what brought that kind of entity into the house. And when he was a baby, that's where that entity landed up, is with him. And I think the mom, just by what I can see and hear, this mother probably kept telling the sister, you know, he's this, he's this, he's this, he's this, he's this. And so the sister was just like, then I want, he needs to be gone. And she tried to kill him. I mean, the sister wasn't wrapped real tight either, but I think that's where that came from, is what the mom said. And we don't know that this mother did not egg this little girl on to try to kill the brother. And, I mean, if the mom was that fearful of him, but yet she's his mom, so if anything happens to him, the first person they're going to go to is the mom. And I keep getting that the reason why the sister did these things is because she was egged on by mom to do it. Because if she were to kill him by shoving him in a pool, toss him out of a train, whatever, then, you know what, they're not going to come at the mom. They're going to say the kids were playing and it was accidental. And she was a child. Where if the mom did that, they're going to come after mom and with manslaughter charges.
Or murder, absolutely. Absolutely. So
I think this is a much
convenient,
more in-depth reasoning on this stuff than what we normally have. But that's, like I said, that's just my opinion.
Makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And then here is the next little portion of our dossier. And this is something that I have never gotten this in my entire life. The mom said she refused to show her son affection because she was afraid that that would turn him gay.
Yeah.
And told the poor kid that he reminded her of his father and that no woman would ever love him. Kemper later described her as a sick, angry woman, and it's been postulated that she suffered from borderline personality disorder. Now, I wrote the word ridiculous right after that. I despise the phrase borderline personality disorder. You either have a personality disorder or you don't. It's like being partially pregnant.
Can I say something about the personality disorder?
Yeah.
Okay, and this is, you know, me being the weird person that I am. I completely believe that there are people that have personality disorders, so I'm not disqualifying that at all. I also believe, because I've known two people in my life that had personality disorders, one had multiple personalities, and I honestly believe in her case, I'm not going to say every case because I'm not a doctor and I don't know everybody, but in her case, there was something messing with her. There were things attached to her, and it's like she would be out for a minute, and all of a sudden you'd see somebody else take over. And this all ties back into what I was saying before, where the mom brought these entities in. And so when they're talking about these personality disorders and this kind of thing, there are, and this part I do know, there are a lot of people that are diagnosed with personality disorders and they actually don't have them. It has to do with dark entities that are messing with them. That's not the case in every situation, but there are situations. And this, like I said, I read this dossier. I've read it 3 times now. This case is entirely different from the other cases that we've gone over. And the whole feel to this is entirely from a different spectrum, completely. And then you look at, too, right before he went into that pool or before his sister tried to push him in front of the train, when that happened, he had a near-death experience. And, you know, when people have a near-death experience, things happen. good things can happen out of it, bad things can happen out of it. And I think we would be remiss if we didn't acknowledge that as being part of the issue with whatever had hold of him. But I do believe that he was possessed, that it was demonic and it was a possession.
And then you got a crazy mom on top of that. Poor kid had
yeah,
no chance,
and I think she, I don't think she was yeah, I don't think she was possessed, but I think she had things attached to her, and I think that could be why they said that she had personality disorders.
Yeah. Well, back to the case at hand. The parents were divorced, and Edmund moved to Montana with his abusive mother before returning to California, where he murdered his paternal grandparents when he was 15. He was diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic by court psychiatrists and was sentenced to a state hospital as a criminally insane juvenile. Now, this is where it gets very interesting. He also became a member of the California JCs, the Civic Club, while in Atascadero prison, and said that he helped develop some new tests and some new scales on the Minnesota Multiple Personality Inventory, specifically in overt hostility scale, during his work with Atascadero psychiatrist. I mean, the kid was actually very, very smart. The doctor talks about how when he was tested first for his IQ, and he was tested over 120, and then the last time they tested him, it was 145, which is, you know, super, super high, because 100 is average. And, I mean, average means the majority of the people in the United States have an IQ that's right around 100. So, anyway, mm-hmm. This is very interesting. And because he was so kind to the doctors and he was so perfect, when he was there and he was admitted as a juvenile, they kind of said, well, maybe he's okay. We'll let him out. He convinced them to let him out when he was 21, and they did. And they, of course, expunged his record, and nobody knew whatever happened, and he went out. And he got a job with the highway department. And congratulations, Edmund. You got a decent job that was able to pay you a salary, and you could make a living. So he goes and works with them, and then he's in an accident, and he sues, and he got $15,000. Now, way back then, that was the equivalent of $90,000 today, so he got him a souped-up car, and he was just thrilled riding around Alameda, California, just hanging out with his buddy and, you know, get away from his mother, because she certainly stayed on him. He had moved out into his own apartment, and she would have surprise visits, and, you know, that's not fair to a kid. That's really not.
No.
That makes you really hate your parent even more. And unfortunately, whenever he had financial problems, he would end up having to return to his mother's apartment. So what happened is he was at a beach in Santa Cruz, and he met a student from Herlock High School, and he became engaged to her in March of 73. The engagement, however, was broken off after his second arrest, and his fiancée's parents requested her name not be revealed to the public because apparently they felt it would have been very, very embarrassing. So anyway, he was working at the highway division. He got his new car. He would drive around in his 69 Ford Galaxy that he bought with part of his settlement money. And he noticed a lot of girls hitchhiking, because in the mid-70s, it was okay to hitchhike. We always thought the world was safe and a wonderful place back then. So he picked up about 150 girls before he kind of felt the need to become a monster. And now this is where Tony's assessment comes right into play. He had an 11-month spree where he killed 5 college students, 1 high school student, his mother, and his mother's best friend. And so that 5, 6, 7, 8, so he killed 10 people. I mean, just pretty horrible.
And she would, again, she would say, she worked at a college, and she would not go to the trouble to introduce him to any girls from the college. She said, "You're just like your father. You don't deserve to get to know him." And so what happened is psychologists came up with the idea that the girls that he killed were really surrogates for his ultimate target, turned out to be his mother. So anyway, basically, I didn't want to go into this, to the sick details. He would either rape and murder or murder and rape. And he would dismember. And he would and he was a necrophiliac. I mean, he was a mess. Now, Tony, at this point, do you have any comments? This is your boy.
I think that he could have been possessed. I know that he was just dark, dark evil, for sure. So I think since he was a small child, he knew his path. Something was direct, and it could be like Robin said, something could have been directing him. He could just, but he had chosen this path, or he was being pulled along this path. I think that the sisters tried to kill him because they were scared to death of him. I think it was more of a, they might have looked at it as him or them, you know, type things. Whenever that, because look, whenever he ran away, went to his father's for a short time. That's when he went to, and his father started causing friction between his father and his new wife and his new family. And so that's when he was sent to live with his paternal grandparents. So if you're, you know, a child, and you're looking for somebody to care for you and to love you and things like that, his grandmother probably was mean to him. He doesn't say a whole lot about it except that she was domineering. But why do you feel, I think at that time, whenever his dad sending him there, he looked at that as the ultimate rejection, and that triggered that all his inhibitions and all his fantasies and all his dark, the darkness bubbled out, and he killed his grandparents. I mean, why do you do that? You know, he's living out his fantasy at that point. He's starting to live out the fantasy. Kills the grandmother, grandfather comes home, kills the grandfather. Then whenever they put him in the hospital, my thing is, he's so smart that he figured the system out. So he goes, okay, I'm going to tell these people what they want to hear. I'm going to do this. It's all a puzzle. It's all a game to him. And he plays that. He becomes the chameleon. And he also talks about picking up 150 hitchhikers before he killed the first one. And he hung out at a bar, a police bar. When I say police bar, it's where the policeman went to drink, to learn. And he was picking up, because I've watched several of his interviews in the last two or three days. And from what I'm picking up, he did that to learn how the cops thought. And to disarm them, so to speak, about that he was affectionately known as Big Ed. And when he went to turn himself in, at first they wouldn't believe him because they liked him. He learned to become that chameleon. And I think that's what makes, you know, most serial killers, so scary and so dangerous. You don't think they're a serial killer. And he knew that. He knew he had to master that to be successful. And so he picks up 100 to 150 female hitchhikers, and he learns what they like, they don't like. Like if he talks a certain way, or if he does this, it puts them off, or they won't get in the car with him. So he masters. He's honing his craft. And then and he keeps pushing it a little at a time. One, he'll take them to a secluded location, and he doesn't kill them. He just, I'm able to get them in the car, get them to where I need them to be, and they're none the wiser. We talk, we do this, we do that. I take them to where they want to go. Then he incorporates a weapon, the weapons into this scenario. He hides the weapons under the seat, and he's going, okay, I've got them in a secluded place, got them in the car, got them in a secluded place, I have my weapon, I'm almost there, almost there. And then when he picks up the two unlucky hitchhikers, I think 70, was it 72, John? When he killed his first victim?
Yep.
Or his first,
it was. Yeah.
After he killed his grandparents. And so I think that Edmund Kemper, if he hadn't decided, if he hadn't killed his mother and her friend, and I know we have a lot more to talk about besides that, but if he hadn't killed his mother and her friend, invited her friend over for dinner and killed her and put her in a closet, then he went out and had a drink, and who knows, you probably went to the cop bar, and he comes back, and then he has relations with the lady's corpse, and he's got two dead women in the, in the apartment. Then he gets in the car and he takes off, and in his words, he said, "I decided to come out of the cold," and so he calls and turns himself in. I think if Kemper wouldn't have snapped and killed his mother and her friend, that he would have killed for years and years and years and years and never got caught. He had learned his craft that well.
Yeah, he really had. Yeah, and it's just the same as you're right. If he hadn't gone after his mother and her friend, it wouldn't have been a problem. All right, well, it is 9:37, and it's time for a quick station break for VSC Nation. Papa Stroh, you've got two shows that you are featured on this week on VSC Nation. Tell us about the Tuesday and Thursday appearances that you've got on VSC Nation.
Well, tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on VSCNation.com, will be the In the Room podcast with Brady Hicks, Kathy Fitzpatrick, Derek McDonald, Nelson, and myself. We'll be interviewing a special guest and taking callers from all over. And then Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, will be WCW Retro with yours truly, Papa Stroh, the host. And with a special interview with Everett Duvar, who's been a veteran pro wrestling for many years and also a former WCW alumni. So looking forward to interviewing Everett Duvar. And if anybody would like to have questions on the interview to be asked, just email them to WCWRetro@yahoo.com, and I'll get as many out to them during the interview as I can for this Thursday.
Well, that's great. I mean, that's going to be a bang-up show. I mean, he was an interesting guy, and thanks for having him on. So you always have some good guests, Papa Stroh. You really do.
Well, try to make it entertaining for everybody. Matter of fact, Everett Duvar, I mean, on the wrestling end, he was also one of the guests on the past Jerry Springer shows as well. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to talking to him about a lot of his adventures throughout his career. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, do you know offhand what he did on Springer? That would have been interesting, I'm sure.
Well, he's got his own show, his own podcast. It's called the Diego and Duvar Show. And during this particular Springer episode, Diego and him were on that episode as well. Jerry Springer.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Springer's not on anymore, is he?
Well, I haven't kept up with it for a while, but I know they were on the past episode years ago.
I mean, he was always on, so I was just wondering if Jerry Springer's still on. Oh, he was great. I don't know. I think they're all them better than Springer. They're all them really wanted to go crazy. It was always a lot of fun. And Geraldo celebrated real recently 50 years in journalism, so in real journalism. So that's very interesting. Yeah, thanks, Papa Stroh. Everybody join Papa Stroh 9 p.m. on Tuesday and 9 p.m. on Thursday on VOC Nation. Thanks, Brady Hicks. And speaking of Brady Hicks, 2 weeks from tonight,
we will have Brady Hicks Ghost Hunter on ScaryCast. And Robin, Brady should be sending you some photos to take a look at and see what you can see.
Good. Yeah, he's been sending me photos on and off, and I'll tell you, he's got some good stuff.
Brady loves you, Robin. He loves you. Brady loves you.
I just think he's the greatest thing ever. And I appreciate so, so much that he trusts me enough to send me these pictures. That means a lot to me. Like, I take that personally, and it does. It really and truly means a lot to me. I think he's just super sweet. I think he's legit, and I think he gets some incredible footage. He really does. Like, I just love him. So I'm really excited that he's going to be on.
Yeah, we're looking forward to having him. We had him how long ago was it? I think it was before Labor Day. It was in the summer. And we had Brady, and it was a lot of fun. So, yeah, we're looking forward to having him. And Papa Crow, you'll be there. And hopefully Devin will be back. And, Tony, it's just always a lot of fun to have our buddies from VSC Nation joining us. And so, again, we'll be here 11 p.m. Friday, this coming Friday. And you can listen to this show again. And then you can go to Stro the Maestro on Facebook and watch the original Universal presentation, Universal Monsters presentation of The Wolfman, along with Papa Crow and Dorothy. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So anyway, that's going to be great. Now here we go back to the closing of Edmund Kemper, a horrible, horrible murderer. This was interesting. After he killed his mother's friend, he drove nonstop to Pueblo, Colorado, taking caffeine pills to stay awake for the over 1,000-mile journey. Papa Stro, I bet you Malcolm could stay awake for a 1,000-mile journey without caffeine pills. But anyway.
I do not doubt one bit.
Yeah, I think he could. He had three guns and hundreds of rounds of ammunition in his car. And he believed he was the target of an active manhunt. So after listening to a lot of news stations on the radio about the murders of his mother and her friend, when he arrived at Pueblo, he found a phone booth and he called the police. He confessed to the murders of his mother and her friend, but the police didn't take the call seriously and told him to call back later.
This, to me, in a way, backs up my theory of he was possessed, because it sounds to me like when that happened with his mom, the real him tried to come out, and the real him, which had been suppressed by whatever's possessed him, is the one that actually called. He wanted them to stop him. He didn't want it anymore. That's why he called, you know, and he said, listen, I did this. If he didn't want them to know it, he's not going to call him. But it sounds to me like, you know, whatever had possessed him, he was able to break through enough to make these calls.
That certainly makes sense. So once they finally caught up with him, on November 8th, 1973, Kemper was convicted by a 12-person jury that deliberated for only 5 hours before declaring him sane and guilty on all counts of murder. He asked for the death penalty, requesting for death by torture.
And see, no normal human being would do that.
He's insane.
But anyway,
yeah, definitely.
Since then, he's been incarcerated at the California Medical Facility. He's waived his right to a parole hearing several times and said he is happy in prison. What he does is he helps schedule folks that are incarcerated for their trips to their doctors and things like that, and he's just completely happy, and he's a model prisoner, and he's actually quite happy. He was last denied parole in 2017, and his next parole hearing is in 2024. He doesn't look very healthy. He looks like he weighs about 400 pounds, and he might want to probably stay in prison because it would be hard for a 400-pound guy with no parents to, because apparently his sister, his one of his sisters has died, and I think he would have a hard time knowing where to go and what to do. So he might be better off staying in prison. So I guess what I'd like to do is I'd like to ask our panel, what is your final opinion on dear old Edmund, who killed, I think, 11 people in total? He's incarcerated. He's happy to be there. Killed his mother, who was horrible to him. Killed his grandmother, who was apparently horrible to him and his grandfather. So first of all, we're going to ask Tony. Then we're going to ask Papa Stroh. Then we're going to ask Robin. So, Tony, what do you think about the interesting and odd case of Edmund Kemper?
Edmund Kemper is 150% criminally insane, but he's also a genius. He's repeating the same behavior as he did whenever he was incarcerated for the murders of his grandparents. Model, he's a chameleon. I think that, you know, like Robin said, when he called, he wanted to stop,
but he couldn't.
He couldn't stop. But then I get, you know, I don't know whether that he messed up when he, you know, he didn't really. He said that he knew a week before he was going to kill his mother that it wasn't a. There was some trigger, and he says, "I knew I was going to kill her." He says, "I went." She had been out to a party. This is the night of the murder. And she came in, and she had in the bed, reading the book. I went in, excuse me, sat down on the bed, looked at her, and she said, "Well, I guess you want to sit and talk on that, don't you?" And he says, "No." He says, "I just want to tell you good night," and he proceeds to murder her. And so, again, I don't know why that he, you know, whether he was trying to get closure in his mind for all the things that she had done to him, and I think that what his mother did to him, his sisters did to him, which, you know, I think his sisters were really afraid of him, and all the abuse that his mother had done to him all those years, especially during his formative years, that he hated all women. And that each one that he killed maybe was his mother.
Maybe
they just weren't objects. Maybe they were just, because all of his victims were random. Pretty well random. He's, you know, except the spur of the moment stuff with his grandparents when he was a juvenile. But I think, again, I think he honed his craft, and the victims were just random hitchhikers until his mother and her friend. I don't know why he knew that he killed her friend. He just says, "Hey, I just called her up and invited her over to dinner." I guess he says, "Hey, me and Mom and I want you to come over for dinner. Why don't you come on over?" She says, "Sure." So when she gets there, he murders her and puts her in a closet and then goes to the bar and has a few drinks and comes back and finishes up the evening with her corpse. I think he's just, I think he's a genius. I think that he's a very interesting study. Because of the way that he honed his craft, you know, he talks about how when he was first started his killing, that he dropped his pistol out of his pocket. He locked the car keys. He locked his car keys in with a victim, and he says, "And I talked her into letting me unlock in the car and letting me back in, and then he kills her." You know. So this guy honed his, he knew he was insane, but he knew exactly how to manipulate. He's a master manipulator, as all serial killers are. But
yeah.
In closing, he's just absolutely 110% insane and possibly could have had a dark entity pushing him, because who does stuff like that? I mean, Who does shit like that? Excuse my language. Unless it's your, you know, something in the way that he was guided, it seemed like, you know?
Yeah.
He's super intelligent, and he was either, you know, something was guiding him, or he just was that dang smart. You know, something, I mean, this guy is just off the charts interesting, and I think he's super dangerous. He had to be good at what he did. He's 6'9". I wouldn't get in the car with somebody that's 6'9". You know, and say, hey, come on, I'll take you where you want to go. I'm going, I'm going to wait for the next one. I'm going to take the bus.
Tony's going to take the bus. All right, well, if I'm ever 6'9", I'll make it a point not to offer you a ride up to the top of Black Mountain like Manzo Shepherd did. Okay? I'll make sure not to do it.
Yeah.
All right, well, Tony, thanks. That's a great closing opinion. Papa Stroh, what do you think about Edmund Kemper?
Well, if this guy was a fruit, he'd be a dilapidated prune. I mean, this guy was, like, rotten to the core. And just, like, Tony and Robin mentioned earlier, I mean, there was something going on way in the past with this guy to do what he did. I mean, to drive him to go into that maniacal, psychopathic mindset that he had through those years. So, this guy had a lot going on from, like, way back. It wasn't just a, like, spur-of-the-moment thing. This guy had issues that just kept building and building like a snowball until finally it was too big enough for him to even control. Because, I mean, even when the times they mentioned where he tried to control, he tried to do the right thing, it was just the addiction to do what he was doing was just out of his hands. And he was his own monster, more or less, and he couldn't control the monster.
He'd make a good horror film for Friday night, wouldn't he?
Nah. This guy, I mean, this guy would make, if you put this guy in prison, you would feel sorry for the prisoners. So that way.
Yeah, how would you like to get him for a cellmate? Woo.
Mm.
Pretty horrible. Well, thank you. That's a good wrap up. And the Queen of Scary Cast, what do you think about Sir Edmund Kemper? No, just Edmund Kemper.
Well, I think, like I said before, I think this case is completely different than the cases we normally look at, psychologically wise. I think that, you know, obviously he had problems. I mean, that's undisputable. But I really think that at some point in time, something took possession of him, and I think it happened as a baby. I think his mom was dark enough where this stuff was all coming in, and here's this innocent baby, and babies are born neutral. When they're born, they aren't good or evil. They're neutral. And I think whatever this thing was took him, and I think that's what started it. I think he was highly intelligent. I agree with everything Tony said. I really do, and I think that he was smart enough to know what to do, and he practiced it. He studied it. You know, I think as far as what Tony said about honing his craft, I agree completely. And I think that when he finally called him about his mom, I think he wanted it to stop. I think he'd wanted it to stop before, and he was never strong enough to stop it. And I think he practiced it. He had it all down pat, how to do it, what was the right way to do it that was going to get us the most effective. I think when he was chopping off heads and cutting their hands off, that was directly result because of what his mom did. His mom was physically abusive. She was mentally abusive. And I think that's where the cutting off the head and the hands came from. You know, that was the only way he knew of to fight back because he's never been able to fight back before when she went after him. And I think, you know, we don't really know. I didn't see, at least on what was sent to me, there wasn't a whole lot about his relationship with the grandparents. You know,
Now, were they decent people? I have no idea. But I wonder, too, if they were decent, you know, maybe he was afraid that if he did love them and if he did trust them, he was going to end up getting hurt, just like he did with his mom. Or maybe they were as abusive as the mom. We just don't know. You know, from what I saw, there wasn't enough there to determine which way it goes. But I think the reason he's in jail, happy, I mean, we know why he's in jail, but I mean, why he's happy there is because he's guarded 24 hours a day. They're not going to let him do anything to anybody else. And I think that's probably the most secure feeling he's had his entire life. Because he's smart. He knows he's been out of control his whole life. He knows how afraid of him everybody is. And I think in there, he's probably more relaxed because he feels like at least there's somebody to stop me from continuing what I've already been doing. And I think that's why he always turns down parole. He's not even trying to get parole. He don't want to go. If he's out of there, he has no control anymore. And whatever this thing is, whether it's a possession or whether or not it's just he's crazy, both, whatever, at least in jail he has some type of, I mean, some type of breathing room. Like when he was out because of all these things going on in his mind and he's killing this one, he's killing that one, he had to be on edge 24 hours a day because he's listening to the voices in his head telling him to do all these things. For him to go to jail has to be a huge sigh of relief because he no longer has to be the one trying to control himself from killing anybody because they're not gonna. And I think that's why he wants to stay in jail, because he's finally got as much peace as he's going to personally get because they keep an eye on him.
Absolutely. That's what I thought when I read and reread that dossier. Well, I tell you what, it's been an interesting ride as we discussed the curious story of Edmund Kemper. Well, now next week, Scary Cast will have a wrestling guest. The final week of October, we will have Brady Hicks, Ghost Hunter. And the first week of November, we will have John LeMay on with Roswell Nation and special guest co-hosts, along with our regular co-hosts. We'll have Murder 123 Surgeon General Trey Donaway, and we will have Sunny the California Girl. She wants to talk a little bit to John LeMay about Roswell. She talked to me about that this morning. So we'll have a bunch of co-hosts. It'll be a lot of fun that first weekend in November. So we've got a lot of great things planned. We'll see you. I will see you Wednesday night on Pop Culture Stars and Thursday night at 9 p.m. right there on WCW Retro. Papa Stro, I'll see you on WCW Retro, okay?
Can't wait.
All right, Robin and Tony, we'll talk to you guys soon. Take care.
You guys all take all right. care.
Good night.
Bye.
Take care, everybody.
Bye. Bye.